Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution, newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions of the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be a time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Margaret, a compulsive overeater from Georgia.
You're muted, Margaret.
There we go. Well, I'm unmuted, right? Yay! Boy, my mind just went to Florida for about 4 seconds there. First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for inviting me to the meeting. It's always a pleasure to meet new people. I have a dog in the background that's killing one of his toys right now, so you may hear some strange noises, but really there's no sacrifices being made. It's just the dog and his toy. But anyways, and I have to say I'm very nervous right now. So what it used to be like. Well, first of all, I got started in program. I did not originally get started in OA. I got started in another 12-step program. And after I'd been in that program for a year, I realized that I could not stop eating. And I'd never known that about myself. I thought that my problem was, relationships, lack of money, lack of education. Poor Margaret, they didn't treat you right when you were growing up. I had a list of poor Margaret's that was a mile and a half long. And because it was in my head, I thought it was accurate and it was real. And one of the big things that I'm still learning every single day is that just because I think it doesn't mean it's true. It just means that I thought it. And if you stop and consider how many thoughts you have an hour, how many you have a day, how many you have a year, I'll be 73 in a couple days. That's a lot of thoughts that have gone through this brain of mine. And for me to think that absolutely everything that I ever thought, felt, or believed was accurate, real, and true, that's my ego. But again, if it's in my head, then I think, well, it must absolutely be 100% true and accurate. So that was one of that ego state of, if I'm thinking it. And what makes it so bad or even worse is the disease talks in your own voice. It's, although sometimes, I feel like I can hear my mother in the back of my head or an old school teacher or some voice from somebody saying, oh, you can't do that. Or, how dare you? Or just some kind of limiting pejorative voice. And that's basically, that's what I came out of, was a lot of me telling myself I didn't have any worth. I wasn't a good person. I dressed funny. Any kind of insult that I could hurl at myself, that's generally what happened. And to calm myself, guess what? That's where food came in. And when I was, gosh, I guess I was like maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. And my mother had taken 4 or 5 of my brothers and sisters. I come from a family of seven brothers and four sisters, so there's always a lot of people milling around. But anyways, so we went to go see my aunt, who, again, this is what my brain told me, that she was far above us because she lived in a house in a city and we lived out in the country. And so therefore, that was something else that was wrong with me. I wasn't polished or whatever. But anyway, so I went to with my mother. She took us to go visit my aunt. And my aunt said, well, aunt, my aunt said, see, there goes the boy saying, no, it's not aunt, it's aunt. So my aunt said, you know, dinner will be ready in about 40 minutes. Why don't you go find something to do? And so I did. And what I found to do was I had, even at that young an age, I had saved some money that had been given to me. And, you know, money that I'd found while I was out walking, but just accumulated enough money to buy a box of AIDS candy. And I don't know how old everybody is, if you're probably older than 60, you might remember it. But anyways, it was a diet aid that was wrapped in, they were like individual squares, like the size of a dice or a die. And they were individually wrapped. And the idea was if you ate one or two of these and then had a cup of hot water, it would decrease your appetite and you wouldn't eat as much. Well, because, hey, buddy, because I was lesser than at my aunt's house and very low on the totem pole, I was nervous. I was so anxious. And I thought, I eat too much. That's what the problem is. So I'll just take one of these and I'll, you know, then I won't eat as much. And then they can't go, oh, that Margaret is such a pig. Do you have to eat that much? Again, here goes my head just doing all this ad-libbing.
I think she was just dropped by her server. We'll just give her a minute to come back in. There she is.
Oh, Margaret, there I am. I don't know what happened. Yeah, I have no idea what happened. But anyway, so I ate. Instead of eating just one or two of these, I ate the entire box. And Thunder, come here. What was so striking about this whole thing was as soon as I had eaten the box of candy, I was not anxious or afraid or upset about anything. And it was just like a light switch had gone off in my head. And I thought, this is so cool. And I was happy. And, you know, as a, however old I was, a 6-year-old or a 9-year-old or whatever. And I had a great evening. And that was the first time that I ever realized that if something was really upsetting me, that food would handle it. Food was the way to go. Food would take care of it. And, you know, even to be that young and make that realization today, that just floors me that, you know, somebody that young could drop into addiction that early and just, so that was the beginning of my compulsive eating. And well, it was the beginning of realizing that food could do for me what nothing else had been able to do. You know, when I went to school, I could talk to the teachers and the anxiety never lifted about how I felt about myself or And I just learned to eat and eat and eat. Now, as far as weight goes, I'm a yo-yo dieter. So I was one of those people that would put on 15 pounds and take off 8, and then put on 10 and take off 22. And then, you know, it was just up and down and up and down. But I carried, I was always overweight. Always overweight. And when I was in school, I think I was 14. I just gone into the eighth grade. No, it must have been the ninth grade. I was suicidal because a skirt that I tied on for dance at school, I couldn't get into the size that I thought that I should, excuse me, that I should fit into. And I just literally wanted to just step out in front of a train. That's all I can say is I just felt suicidal. And so that really has been the story about my compulsive eating. The false idea that if I just lost weight, if I changed on the outside, that the inside would change. And so I finally got into this, into another 12-step program when I was, I guess I must have been in my late 30s, something like that. I've been in programs since 1987. And I got into OA in 1988. So the original program that I started out in, I was in it for a year when I realized that I couldn't stop eating. And at that point, I stayed in that same program and then started in OA. And one thing, when I started in OA, the big thing was I was so amazed that nobody asked me to leave at the first meeting. I came in and sat in one of the chairs and was very quiet. I did not want to be noticed. I didn't want anybody to look at me or anything else. And when it was all over, you know, one or two people came up and said, hello, how are you, whatever. But again, I was so amazed that nobody said, what are you doing here? You don't belong here, go. And don't ever come back again. The first thing that I heard in the meeting was, as a newcomer, was try 6 meetings. You can go to the same one 6 times or go to 6 different ones or however you want to do it. And see after 6 meetings, is this for you? Do you think, can you identify, do you feel the way that some of the speakers felt? Have you done some of the things that the speakers or the other people, not necessarily the speakers, but other compulsive eaters in the room have done? And that's finally how I realized that I really was a compulsive eater, was I thought, well, maybe I haven't gone to the extremes that some people have. I've never been anorexic or bulimic, but I could identify with every feeling that they talked about how they felt shame or guilt or stupid or, and a prevailing one for me was, let me try one more thing and then I'll get it. This is the one that's really going to work. This thing that I haven't tried yet. And so, there it goes. I'm going to go over here. Actually, I almost wish I could put all the signs. I tried every diet that came my way. I tried, when I was 12, I tried speed. And what happened there was, I lived out in the country, and one of the doctors in a shopping mall about a mile or two away from us, my sister said, well, this doctor sells diet pills. And this was back in the late 50s, early 60s, it must have been early 60s. And she said, you know, they're only a dollar a piece, and you can go down there and you don't have to, you know, like have an appointment or anything. And you just go. And so I would go every so often and take my babysitting money. Or again, money that I had earned or accumulated and just go buy a couple diet pills. And it was not, I did not find out later, much later, I was probably in my early 20s or early 30s when somebody said, he was selling you speed. And I was like, oh my God. But I do remember about the third time I went to go down and get one, get a couple pills. And this is just how my higher power always looked up, always taking care of me, despite what I felt. So I took, I think it was the third time I took one of these, and I went up to the bedroom and laid, and the room was going around and around at 90 miles an hour. And the intuitive thought, if I keep doing this, I'm going to die. And that all it took us up doing that anymore. So from the next thing I tried all kinds of stuff between them. But the next thing I tried was smoking and I'm such a maroon, let me tell you. But
I think we lost her again.
Yeah, we lost her again. We'll just give her a minute. Yeah, it's a bad connection. She'll be back.
You're muted. Margaret, you're muted.
She's not back yet, is she?
She is, oh, yeah. She is. We can't hear you, Margaret.
Oh, I'm
yeah, I don't know why. Well, anyways, I'll just keep trying to have you redo whatever. But what were we talking about?
You have to back up a little bit because it was kind of garbly at the end. The connection was poor.
You were talking about smoking.
Oh, I started smoking when I was 13. And, you know, when people talk about this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and that all it really wants to do is to see you dead, and it doesn't care how it does it, you can take that to the bank. So I started smoking at 13, and I smoked for 25 years. And in between the smoking, there were the diet pills from the grocery store. There was, you know, if anybody ever wants a list, I wrote it all out once. I had about 47 different things that I tried to do. Well, that's what happened. And I was going to OA regularly, didn't miss a meeting. My butt was in the metal folding chair, you know, every Sunday. At one point, I was doing like four meetings a week for, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe 10 years, something like that. Plus, I was doing a couple other programs as I could see problems evolving from the more I was getting to know myself, the more that I could see I needed help in many, many areas. And the answer for me was always to go work the 12 steps. And so that's what I did. But I just lost my train of thought again. I'm sorry. I just had surgery about 2 months ago, and I'm still doing immunotherapy for the cancer, which is from the smoking for 25 years. What a goose. But anyways, you know, I'm fine. Everything's fine. But it just still amazes me how the disease will tell you, you know, well, you can't, don't do that. That's, you know, whatever it is. Don't, you know, don't do drugs or whatever. Let's go have a cigarette. Or don't do, don't smoke, but let's go shopping or whatever. And I just thought that I could figure everything out. And this is while I was in program. And I guess I've been in program now for about 36 years, something like that. And it was only about 5.5 years ago that I just finally said, you know what? I give up. I do. And I was talking to a friend of mine after one of the meetings, and this was before COVID-19. And so there's still newspapers and people were still meeting and talking to each other, you know, instead of doing the electronic communication as much. And so I was talking to a friend of mine after the meeting, and I said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I can't. I absolutely cannot do this. And I know what's going to happen. You know, pretty soon I'm going to quit coming to meetings, and then I'm going to quit working my program, and I'm going to quit talking to people. And, you know, I'm going to quit trying. I'm just going to give up. And then what's going to happen is I'm going to start eating again. And I know where that's going to get me. It's just going to kill me. But you know what? There is absolutely nothing. There is no thing that I can do to change myself or any of my circumstances, because even in program and being in a couple of these other 12-step programs, I have not been able to affect a change. And that was my hitting bottom. And the person that I was talking to, bless her heart, this is really a God story. She looked at me for about 10 seconds, and she gave me the phone number to a phone meeting. And I called that the next day on Monday morning. And that's how I finally got abstinent. It was a big book study, and it's phenomenal. And studying the big book and all that in that meeting is tremendous. But it was me finally giving up and saying, I'm just going to die. And there's not a damn thing. There's nothing I can do. There is absolutely no thing. There's nobody. I don't know what else to try. And when I was talking to my friend, I told her, I said, so, you know, if you're reading the obits, the Atlanta Journal or whatever it is, and you see my picture in there, and it says something like, it's going to be something really stupid about how I died. Like, she tripped over her own foot and fell and hit her head in the driveway, and, you know, or something really so sublimely ridiculous that you'll be like, how in the world could anybody do that? And I said, make no mistake, it will be the compulsive eating. Whatever, however it plays out, it will be the food addiction that finally kills me. Whether I'm mad at somebody and I get up on the ladder and then decide, well, you know, I'm just going to be angry and resentful and take a wrong step and fall off the ladder and, you know, break my neck or whatever. That may be the physical cause, but it's going to be the compulsive eating that caused me to make that wrong step or whatever, because I'm not present when I am compulsively eating. And that's, to me, the greatest thing about being in program, is that you are restored to sanity. And I guess the only other story that I'd like to kind of throw out there was, I was at one point, oh my gosh. Anyways, at one point I was in OA, I was in another 12-step food-related program. I was doing a pay and weigh program at the same time, and I was using a trainer. You know, it's like, what else can you do? None of that had any effect. And I did that not for 1 year or 2 years, for about 12 or 15 years. And I didn't understand the concept of surrendering and just saying, I've tried it all. And I really literally am powerless over food, compulsive eating, managing my own life. I'm just powerless. And what I came to understand when, as I started studying the big book, was, yes, I am powerless, but I'm not helpless. And when I came into my first meeting, I just felt like I was powerless and helpless, and there was nothing that I could do. But the people in the rooms loved me enough that they could see, well, they were aware enough that they could see that I just was kind of a basket case. You know, I was afraid somebody was going to look at me and I'd have to, that would be the end of the world. So what it's like now is, I tell you, this is probably going to sound funny, but this thing about having cancer has been the best experience in my whole life. It has been phenomenal. And I have not been afraid. I have not been, well, in the beginning, I was pretty nutsy, you know, when the doctors first said you got cancer or whatever. But, and my question to the doctors every single time I went, like to the oncologist or the surgeon or whoever was, how long do I have to live? And there we go. I'm surprised they didn't take like a rolled up tube of Christmas wrapping paper and just bang me on the head and go, stop that. Well, my daughter actually did that for me. She lives in Virginia. I'm in Georgia. And she would conference into all the doctor's appointments that I had. And, you know, here, the first question, how long does, you know, what do you think? How long am I going to have to? And one time she just said right up from her chair at work, she said, stop it. And I was so surprised. I was like, stop what? And she said, that is the wrong question that you're asking. How long do I have to live? That is not what you need to know. What you need to know is what can I pack into today? And that is what I get from program. It's fear of the future absolutely has totally left me. And I really enjoy every single day. And a lot of people have said to me, that they can't believe that, of the surgeries and the different things that I went through. And they say, and you've got such a good attitude. And I'm like, I'm on the right side of the dirt. You know, what could possibly go wrong as long as you're alive? And what I have also realized is that as long as I stay in close contact with my higher power to the best of my ability, every single moment of the day is worthwhile. And there's not the that original devastating feeling of unworthiness. I really do have a joy in life that I didn't have before. And I guess I need to say, if anybody's got any questions, I can tell you stupid things I've done for the last 34 years. Oh, I know what the last thing was. So I'm going to have to kill this dog. Thunder, get out of there. He's trying to eat one of my meditation books. But once I started, I admitted that I was absolutely powerless and started in earnest of, Margaret, don't try and figure anything out. Don't try and figure anything out. The only thing you need to know is, God, what are we doing today? You know, what's on the scoreboard? Or, you know, I'm just waiting for you to tell me. And I always get the answer. I always, always get the answer. So I was abstinent for 4.5 years. And then I got the prognosis, the diagnosis of the cancer. And everything went haywire because with the like medications and what have you, you couldn't eat, you know, and here I was just like, oh my God, I got to be abstinent and I got to eat this and I got to eat, you know, whatever my food plan says to eat or whatever. And finally, I was praying about it one day and I had the intuitive thought, Margaret, food is just for you. It's just going to be medicine. And I thought, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. food is just medicine for my body. And after that, and I had to eat all kinds of things that, boy, I was just really revolting at, because they had products in them that I was allergic to. But it was either eat it or, you know, get a lot sicker. And so I talked to my sponsor, I talked to different people about it, and I just started, and I have still have a nutritionist and a dietitian that I listen to. I don't know if I listen to what they say or not, but I
take in. We have about 5 minutes left. Just want to let you know, minutes.
About 3 minutes and I'll wrap it up.
Perfect.
So finally, what I heard from both the dietitians and the nutritionists was, you eat whatever you can eat that's going to stay down and that's going to promote your health. And I, you know, that was just heresy to somebody that for 35 years was like, oh, you know, you can't eat this. And if you're allergic to that food, you can't eat this and you can't eat that. And I just, that was one thing that I just, that was so hard for me to deal with, because my brain was just torturing me about, you can't eat that and be abstinent. And I, one of the meetings that I went to, I asked that as a question about, you know, a general question. And the two people that answered the question for me, both of them didn't say anything at all about food, or they said, Margaret, just know that we love you. And everything was okay after that. And so now I'm back, you know, those foods that I was eating that I was so worried about, they're out of my diet, and I'm back on the quote unquote straight and narrow. So life is good. So, and with that, I pass.